Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Dave Fick, co-founder and CEO of Mythic. Dave leads Mythic to bring groundbreaking analog computing to the AI interface market. With a PhD in computer science and engineering from Michigan, he brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise to the industry. Welcome to the podcast, Dave.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
First, can you tell us what brought you to the semiconductor industry?
Yeah, I've always been fascinated by computers. I remember my family getting our first, I think it was a Macintosh computer, when I was in elementary school, and then in middle school, I was fascinated with the idea of becoming the lead architect at Intel, working on the biggest and fastest processors. And so ever since then, I've been working on computers, and it's just great to be part of this industry as it's transforming.
Great story. So what brought you to Mythic?
Yeah, I just finished my PhD at the University of Michigan, and my girlfriend at the time, now wife, still had her a number of years left in her PhD. And so I was looking at what can I do in Ann Arbor, Michigan, related to my PhD in computer science and engineering. And there wasn't really remote work at the time. And I had a friend, Mike Henry, who had started a company at the time named Isocline. And that was a government research contracting company. So the Air Force and other parts of the DoD put out these small business innovative research proposals, and you can apply for them to do some innovative research. And so he had one for GPS, and he encouraged me to apply for one for neural networks. There was actually a paper that had just come out at the time, this is in 2012, for AlexNet. So this is a long time ago now, but AlexNet was the first paper where they had applied neural networks to a really big computer vision problem. And this had won the ImageNet competition, blowing away the more classical style of computer vision. And neural networks had been around for decades at that point, but this was the biggest one that actually showed that it could outperform other techniques. And we thought that was really exciting. And so when we were looking at these government proposal opportunities, we found one that would allow us to apply for building an accelerator for neural networks. And the approach that we wanted to take is, you know, we looked out at what it took to do this type of computing. And we knew that if you built a standard digital processor, that's something that Qualcomm and Intel and NVIDIA would be excellent at building. And so we wanted to build something that really stood apart. And so we took on this technique called analog compute and memory, where we combined a flash array, embedded flash, that's a type of transistor that can store charge in the gate, and you use it for solid state drives and other long-term storage memories, and we combined it with analog processing, and that gave us this huge advantage in energy efficiency and performance. So I think we'll talk about that more later, but we basically built the company focusing on how to use analog computing to take on these big problems.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, you know, with the widespread adoption of AI in multiple industrial and consumer markets now, you know, what developments have interested you over the last year in the AI processing space?
Clearly, large language models have been huge in the last year. It's been interesting, not just as somebody working in the AI space, but just as an engineer, working with computers, and especially coding has seen a huge impact in that space. One of the questions that I was at a sort of like a networking event and talking to other CEOs, one of the questions was, how do we get all of our employees to leverage these technologies? Because you know, we might be very interested in them, but how do you train your team to look at ChatGPT and Microsoft's different Copilot products and really get a lot of efficiency out of it? And so over the last few months, we've been working with our team to show, hey, you know, instead of searching for a technical problem on Google, you should be typing in the ChatGPT, and it'll give you a much better result. So it's been really exciting to see these really powerful AI tools come out, especially since they've been so accessible. And there's also been, I think, a significant amount of progress in the computer vision space. I've been seeing a lot more companies applying AI to their products or looking at how to apply computer vision to their products. And that's definitely a market that's up and coming.
Right. So what have manufacturers said about, you know, what's the most important reason to use edge instead of cloud computing?
There's a few different aspects of that. So one is just latency. If you're doing anything interactive, say it's like a sorting machine and you're trying to sort, I think I saw an article about a potato sorting machine recently, and you're trying to sort out the different qualities of potatoes and eliminate potatoes that maybe have really big bad spots. The speed that that machine can run is going to be based on its latency. And so, you know, you take a picture of a potato, and then you need to decide which bin it goes into, and you have to mechanically actuate it. And so going to the cloud just isn't feasible in that case. And the faster you can make it, the faster make the AI processing occur, the faster the machine can run. And so that one aspect is just the latency. You also see that in AR, VR headsets. I don't know if you've tried one, but any sort of delay in the processing in the VR headset can cause nausea. And so you really want the latency between the action a person takes to what they see on the screen needs to be, you know, ideally below 10 milliseconds. And so it's just not feasible to go to the cloud in that case. And so the place that computer vision plays a role in that is, if you've seen with the Apple VR headset, I think you'll see with other ones as well, there's a lot more interest in not just pure VR, but how can I blend my environment with what I'm seeing visually. And so in order to blend the environment that people see, you have to be able to capture it and do processing on it and recognize what's in that environment to take advantage of it.
I'm guessing automotive is similar, right? You don't want latency.
Yeah, of course. If you need to detect a vehicle stopped in front of you, you don't want to go all the way to the cloud and back in order to make a decision to stop. So there's a scalability issue there as well, just in terms of bandwidth. We've working with some companies that are doing larger scale deployments in, say, like a factory environment. And if you have hundreds or thousands of camera systems, you can't pipe all that video back to the cloud. That needs to be processed locally. And just from a sort of like an infrastructure design perspective, if you can put the processing right at the camera, there's fewer wires, there's fewer components, it's more scalable, because if you have to network everything together for this computer vision or other AI processing, it makes everything just more complicated. And so from an ease of scalability point of view, having the processing right at the camera system makes everyone's lives a lot simpler.
Right. What are some of the key applications you see edge processing making the strongest impact?
I think right now the industrial space seems to be the one that's going to be the earliest adopter. And that's because it's easiest to translate the benefit directly to dollars. So, you know, we talked about the potato sorting machine. If you can add a computer vision capability to that process, you can calculate directly, you know, how much money is that going to save? How much more efficient is this machine going to be? If you're adding computer vision to, say, like a home security camera, there you can get notifications that there's a maybe like a person there or a package there, or maybe you can even recognize the person, but that doesn't have a direct dollar value. And so it becomes a little more nebulous from what that benefit's going to be. And so we're seeing a big impact in the industrial space. I think we're going to see a big impact in AR, VR pretty soon. And then anything where there's the latency requirement needs to be met. So, robotics is another example, vehicles, drones. Those applications are all trying to be much more autonomous and see that scalability that AI helps provide, while also needing to react very quickly and maybe with limited bandwidth.
Yeah, good examples. You mentioned analog. What about analog computing inspired the team to make it an integral part of Mythic's processors?
Yeah, analog really provides this huge benefit in terms of information density. If you look at, my PhD was in VLSI design and looking at sort of the end of Moore's law and scalability. So as you make processors bigger and bigger, the communication becomes a challenge. And so if you look into how many ways of superscalar do you have? How big are the caches? And you can't scale all of those up and make a really fast processor because the communication latency ends up dominating the performance. And so what analog computing does is, instead of having a one or zero on a memory cell or a one or zero on a wire, we're going to use, say, 256 values, or maybe even 8 bits, or maybe we can have 25 bits of information on a wire. And by increasing that density, we're able to shrink the distance that information needs to travel. And that ends up really greatly improving the performance. So for example, neural networks use megabytes of weight memory. So these weights are basically filters that are being applied to typically convolutionally to some image or some other piece of data. And just accessing that memory over and over again ends up being a huge cost and energy. But also, since it's a large amount of memory, you have to travel big distances to move it from the store, like efficient storage, to the processor. And so what analog allows us to do is, instead of storing an 8-bit value with SRAM, if you're using an 8-transistor SRAM cell and you're storing 8 bits, and that's 64 transistors. But if we use flash transistors, it ends up being a pair of two T cells, two transistor cells. So we can store 8 bits in only 4 transistors. So when you can decrease the number of transistors from 64 to 4, you can really cut down on the size. And the number of wires moving and sources and drains moving in the transistors, those are all capacitance. And as you know, the place that energy is drawn from in processors is not like the resistances of the wires or the resistance of the transistors. It's how much capacitance is being charged and discharged over and over again. So if we can reduce the number of devices and we can reduce the number of wires, then the amount of charge that's being discharged ends up being greatly reduced. And so we really saw a huge advantage in analog. Now the challenge with analog is, of course, it's not a bit accurate compared to digital. So you don't want to do like your spreadsheet, Microsoft Excel. You're not going to want to execute that in analog computing. But we have this huge space now of sensors and sensor processing. So trying to recognize what is the information that we see in all of this data, And that also applies to language as well, like written language. And so we're trying to make predictions about what is contained in some information in the inference space, or the what type of information would the user like to be generated based on some input. And in both of those cases, it's sort of a predictive task. There's no right or wrong answer. There's better and worse answers, but there's no right and wrong answers. And so in these cases, I think that lends itself very well to analog computing. So if you think about, if I have an image that I'm trying to recognize all the people in and their poses, for instance, there's already going to be fuzziness in that image and fuzziness in the exact positions of all the limbs and the exact poses and all the people. There's even labeling error typically in these types of images. And so that lends itself, that predictive task of, can I predict what are all of the positions of the limbs, ends up being something that analog computing can really excel at. And so we've been really excited about the combination of AI with analog computing. We think that analog computing, that's is something that used to be a lot more popular in the earlier days of computing, and is now poised to make a comeback now that we have these really processing intensive applications that could take advantage of it.
Yeah, I agree completely. Analog design is now on the forefront of, you know, leading edge technologies, which is, you know, fairly new for our industry, right? Analog was always trailing edge. So you guys, your timing is perfect, I think. So in regards to business, on the business side, what are your areas of focus?
You know, talking to customers, I think we've seen one of the biggest questions is, how can we get the cost down and get the power down of these computer vision applications? If you looked at the space in terms of the research that's being published versus what's actually being deployed in industry, there's a fairly sizable gap. And that's because researchers will work with these huge, you know, NVIDIA servers and very, you know, multi-thousand dollar GPUs and come up with excellent architectures for running different AI applications. But then when you go and deploy it into an actual product, there's not usually the amount of cost, or, you know, BOM cost available in order to add that much compute to a system. And so there's been a fairly big gap between what's technically possible in research versus what's actually being deployed today. And so what we've been working on at Mythic is, how do you bring that cost down quite dramatically? And how can you also improve the performance and the power? And so we have a couple new generations of products on the horizon that are basically taking everything we learned from our first generation and bringing it down in cost by an order of magnitude, and really showing that, like, hey, in a low cost system, we're saying, like, in a system that's only hundreds of dollars, not thousands of dollars, can we bring 1080p or 4K computer vision? Instead of, I think we've seen quite a few places where the computer vision being deployed in these types of systems is maybe using 200 by 200 resolution or 400 by 400 resolution. How can we make that 1080p and 4K for at a price point that can be supported by a product that ultimately has, you know, an end product that ultimately has a price in the hundreds of dollars range instead of thousands of dollars range?
Right. So looking forward, Dave, what are you most excited to see in 2024 from an AI development perspective?
What I'm really excited to see is how large language models can be combined with other areas of AI. And so I think there was a great paper from Google that was looking at combining an LLM with a computer vision model to allow the machine to take a high level set of instructions and combine that with a visual understanding of the environment and take some action. I think in one example I heard, they asked the robot to pick up some toy dinosaurs that were on a table. So the robot could see the toy dinosaurs, it could understand the verbal command of picking it up, even though that wasn't trained into the machine, and it could take those sorts of actions automatically. And so I'd like to see more of that being applied to, I mean, I know right now, if I can't ask like my Nest Cam, like, hey, tell me when, you know, this person shows up at my house and send me a notification. Google could go and write those types of features into their software, but it'd be nice to be able to ask sort of any question to these types of IoT systems and be able to have it take an intelligent action when it occurs. I've also seen other places with IoT where you're trying to control things and it requires a fair amount of coding, and being able to talk to these AIs would really open up that space. So I think IoT could be greatly impacted by making it easier to use through these sort of capabilities. And then I also think that some of the challenges for deploying AI for some other applications could be greatly improved through AI. So, or through these large language models. So one example is I've talked to some companies that want to deploy, say, let's say you're trying to make a new product that's trying to make smart parks. So this would be a product where it's a drone that maybe flies through all of the trails in a state park and figures out which trails need maintenance work and which buildings need maintenance work and, you know, where are they seeing the most foot traffic, that sort of thing. Well, if you want to make the drone fly along these trails, then you need to create a computer vision data set that helps you identify the trail and what kind of condition it's in. And so this is a place where there's a lot of manual labor involved in data collection, and it'd be great to use a really broadly powerful like LLM to help design that data set. And then you can take that data set and train it on a much more compact computer vision model and make it make that development process much simpler for the user. And so I think there's these places where we can leverage these really broad general purpose LLM type technologies to create to help build much more focused computer vision and other sensor processing type applications. And so I'm really excited to see what happens in those spaces. And, you know, obviously LLMs have been hugely impactful for many software developers. So it'd be great to see that branch out into other areas as well.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, AI has brought a new dimension to the semiconductor industry. And, you know, I've been in the industry for 40 years. This is definitely the most exciting time. You know, final question, Dave, how do customers normally engage with Mythic?
We have a few places on our website that they can reach out to us. And so I recommend that they take a look. I personally respond to every message that comes in. So please check out our website.
Yeah, it's Mythic AI, correct? Mythic.ai?
Yes, sir. Mythic.ai.
Great. Hey, thank you for your time, Dave. Excellent conversation. And hopefully we can do a follow-up, maybe with your wife, who's chief architect, right?
Yeah, I'd love to.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.